The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
What is happening in Washington, D.C. today. So European leaders were due to arrive at the White House in the last few minutes. I'm not sure, have they no sign of it yet? And Volodymyr Zelensky arriving at 6 o'clock, and then the Oval Office sit down in front of the glare of the world's media at 6:15. With me to preview all is Michael Baskin, is the CEO of Ukrainian Crisis Centre Ireland, and Scott Lucas, Professor and Policy Analyst at the Clinton Institute at University College Dublin. You're both very welcome. Michael, what are your hopes or expectations today after the meeting between Trump and Vladimir Putin at the end of last week and what we've heard Donald Trump say since then?
Well, first of all, hello, everybody. My expectations are, we need the clarification on what was Trump and Putin talked about. We heard some pieces of information coming from Trump on his social media and some talks between Trump and Zelensky. But I would like to see minimum outcome of this meeting. It's we know what's on the table for Ukraine.
There's varying descriptions emerging of what was said or the tone, certainly. And Donald Trump himself is, you know, talking about how he knows what he's doing. I've settled six wars in 6 months and no other president has done that. And the usual bombastic style he talks about things in. And then at the other end of the spectrum, you've got people talking about, you know, the first signs of betrayal is how they're describing it, you know, and Trump very kind of openly talking about land swaps. And this is all in Ukraine's hands. It's up to Ukraine to end this war. I mean, are you worried at all about what Donald Trump might say to Volodymyr Zelensky today?
I'm more worried about what's going to be on the front lines in Ukraine than what Donald Trump says to Zelensky. Obviously, Donald Trump will apply the pressure and probably trying to put the blame on Ukraine. It's in the hands of Ukraine to stop the war. I think it's in the hands of Putin to stop the war and Putin's regime to stop the war. Ukraine hasn't started the war. Putin wants the part of the Donetsk region, and said he will freeze the lines on the south fronts, which is, what does it mean in reality, how it could be implemented, the region they're looking to swap. It's about 6,600 square kilometers. It's like basically County Wicklow, Dublin, and Wexford together. And how is going to be implemented? Who's going to be implementing it? And I hope we're not going to reach to that point when we need to Ukraine and need to go into land swapping with Russia, because it's the Ukrainian territory, and the President Zelensky was clear on it.
All right. Well, listen, stay with us, Michael. Scott Lucas, as I mentioned, is on the line. Scott, what are your expectations today as to how much pressure Donald Trump is going to try and put Volodymyr Zelensky under?
Well, Kieran, here's where I think we are, which is quite interesting in terms of, I think that Zelensky in Europe may get the initiative. We know that Vladimir Putin manipulated Donald Trump last week. He did so to the effect that Trump suddenly dropped any talk of a ceasefire as a priority so Russia can continue its attacks. And indeed, it's killed another, I think, 14 civilians today. He dropped any talk of toughened sanctions on Russia and its trading partners, and he became a megaphone for Putin's demand, not only that Russia keep the territory it already occupies in Ukraine, but that it be given part of eastern Ukraine, which is under Ukrainian control, the Donetsk region. However, there was a space which was left open for Zelensky in Europe to talk today about security guarantees. And these are the two words they're emphasizing. These security guarantees would effectively say that Ukraine would have a path to the EU. It would have an association, not membership, but an association with NATO, with meaningful guarantees that if it was attacked again by Russia, it would be supported by Europe and the United States. And in return, Ukraine would accept the short-term occupation of the areas that Russia has now. It would not and it will not ever recognize this legally. So these areas do not become part of a greater Russia. And of course, it will not give up territory that it currently holds. But it will accept that Russia, similar to East Germany in the Cold War, is in control of part of this territory in the short term.
So I guess what's unique about today compared to, you know, the previous time we saw Volodymyr Zelensky at the White House, and one suspects we're not going to see a repeat performance in terms of how he was admonished by J.D. Vance, is that the meeting is immediately followed then by a meeting between Donald Trump and all those European leaders who are there or who are on their way there. I mean, how important is that? What pressure might they be able to apply? What's the view of Donald Trump going to be going into that meeting? That these guys are kind of, you know, side players and this is just lip service I have to pay to them? Or is their presence important?
Their presence is essential. Now, let's be clear here. Donald Trump's in a bad mood today. All you got to do is read his Truth Social line that everybody is still making fun of him over his capitulation to Putin. It's all the fake news media, yada, yada, yada. And we've got to negotiate, or rather Volodymyr Zelensky has got to negotiate that photo opportunity where Trump can go off the rails, as we saw in February, and then a one-on-one meeting. But I think Zelensky's clued up. He's in better position to understand what Trump does than he was in February. And then you get to the meeting with the European leaders who are going to show unity alongside Zelensky. And that's going to be very important because it's not going to be the case that Trump, or perhaps more importantly, officials around Trump, including someone like J.D. Vance, are going to be able to drive a wedge between Zelensky and Europe. Big question, Kieran. At the end of the day, if Zelensky and Europe put this proposal forward that I think they are putting forward, will Trump support it? Because we know that Vladimir Putin doesn't want to stop attacking Ukraine. Will Trump give support to this proposal? And if he doesn't, will he blame Zelensky or will he blame Putin for not giving him the deal that is his Nobel Peace Prize in waiting?
Michael, you mentioned the front line. People who are on the front line, Ukrainian soldiers fighting on the front line today. I mean, how those who have, say, you know, who have made the ultimate sacrifice, some of them, you know, and seen their friends and colleagues and peers making the ultimate sacrifice, and those who are continuing to fight, how would they view a deal that involved them abandoning those positions and handing land over to Russia?
I spoke to a couple of my friends who on the front lines in different positions, from soldiers to in the commanding positions, and I said, is anybody talk anybody from your peers, like, you know, soldiers, is anybody raising this question? No, they're asking about more ammo, logistical. They have no time to think about this, like, you know, basically, I think soldiers on the front line, like soldiers in general and in army, they concentrated, they know real attitude of Russian government, and they not discussing much about this, like, you know, because Ukrainians in general would give up a little bit on the relying on the Donald Trump position on this. Obviously, it looks like the Donald Trump more worried about what the Zelensky gonna wear tonight, because that question was asked to the delegation of the Ukrainian delegation was asked, is the Zelensky wearing suit tonight?
I doubt he is wearing a suit.
I hope not.
Tonight, despite the fact that it led to so much trouble the last time, but he's been steadfast in not wearing one, so you'd hate to see him relent on that. Now, how real is the concern? Because again, you know, we talk about this amongst ourselves, but as you say, Michael, you're talking to people on the front line and people in commanding positions on the front line. You know, the fear that any deal, that Donald Trump, in other words, might rush into a deal, he might put pressure on it because he wants to be able to claim victory, you know, himself. I you know, another region of the world that I have brought peace to. Haven't I an amazing president? And he will accept an imperfect deal, so imperfect that actually all it does is allows Vladimir Putin time to build up his army again, build up his resources, build up his munitions, and have another crack at the rest of Ukraine.
And you know, and what was dropped from the news, Putin in the position to looking for the big win. They need it now. The it's a 1,272 days of the big war in Ukraine, and all the length of the Second World War was 2,200 days. And during that time, Russian Soviet Union, don't forget, it wasn't only Russia, it's all mm-hmm. all the countries was able to defeat the Nazis and push it back, and Putin not gaining anything, losing a lot of people. Well, obviously, the financial situation, so they need a big win. So I think it's on the Russian side as well, sort of speak. Like,
how much pressure, Scott, then is Donald Trump under today to secure something? You know, I mean, you know, people will remember, I think I used the word bombastic earlier to describe him, you know, the bombastic claims that he was going to solve this problem in 24 hours. He doesn't like to be reminded of that now. You know, how much pressure is he under, either from his own base or within the Republican Party, or maybe kind of pressure he's placing under himself to get something out of this?
I don't think he's under political pressure, Kieran, to get a deal as such. Okay. I think a lot of Americans have other priorities, say like the economy, for example, or the question of immigration, or even, dare we say it, you know, the Epstein files. But I think he's under personal pressure here simply for two reasons. The first is, If he comes out of this looking like the yo-yo that he's been in recent weeks, he's going to look weak. And if you look weak, you know, in politics, that can affect you on other issues. But secondly, it's going to dent his ego. It's really going to dent his ego. He's already unpredictable and chaotic. And if he comes out at the end of this week and he just simply has nothing to show for this, as much as people may flatter him, it'll be that frustration rather than an immediate political hit that's going to start to erode his presidency.
All right. Well, if people are wondering what he had to say on Truth Social, because Scott mentioned it, he said, "I've settled six wars in 6 months, one of them a possible nuclear disaster, and yet I have to read and listen to the Wall Street Journal and many others who truly don't have a clue tell me everything that I am doing wrong on the Russia-Ukraine mess that is sleepy Joe Biden's war and not mine. I'm only here to stop it, not to prosecute it. It would never have happened if I was president," etc., etc. These are stupid people. He says, Scott, I think he's talking about you there.
I would love to be number one on his list, but I think he's got others that he's aiming at first.
Listen, thanks for chatting to us, Scott. Scott Lucas, Professor and Political Analyst at the Clinton Institute at University College Dublin. Michael, thank you very, very much for coming into us. Michael Baskin is the CEO of Ukrainian Crisis Centre Ireland. The big news, the big focus is this evening on Washington, D.C. in the White House, because already inside the building are Keir Starmer, the UK Prime Minister, Emmanuel Macron, the French Prime Minister, Ursula von der Leyen representing the European Commission. Giorgia Meloni is there from Italy, Mark Rutte from NATO. Alexander Stubb is there, I see, the Finnish Prime Minister, or former Finnish Prime Minister, I think Finnish President these days. But anyway, the point is that the great, the good and and other of Europe have arrived, and we are waiting for Vladimir Zelensky's arrival. It was due at 6 o'clock, so a few minutes behind schedule, but we have a shot of the front of the White House there waiting for him to arrive. And by 6:15, they were meant to be in the Oval Office before the full glare of the world's cameras. And this was the meeting that went so terribly the last time it happened. Remember Vladimir Zelensky sitting there? It was only a couple of weeks before Micheál Martin's visit. It's what made so many of us so nervous for the Taoiseach of this country, is that Zelensky got such a dressing down over his attire. And if reports are to be believed, the Ukrainian delegation have already been asked, what is Vladimir Zelensky going to wear into the White House today? So one would hope that doesn't become a fixture or a focus of this particular meeting. The fixture and focus is Ukraine and peace in Ukraine. And we spoke about it earlier in the show. We're going to speak about it now. And indeed, as soon as there is any update in terms of Zelensky's arrival or that meeting with Trump or indeed anything else, we will let you know about it in real time. But Larry Donnelly is with me, the law lecturer at the University of Galway, political columnist, of course, with the Journal as well. And Nadia Dobranska, who is a Ukrainian historian here in Ireland. Nadia, what are your feelings today ahead of this meeting, given how much the near future of your country might hinge on what comes out of it, if anything?
Well, I'm sceptical that anything is going to come from these talks today. And I understand the high expectations of everyone else, but myself and many Ukrainians are just looking at this situation as more of the same. So I expect them, these talks to stall at best, or to have worse stuff coming up at us if Trump keeps encouraging Putin that he is on their side.
And is that your assessment of the meeting that happened last week between Trump and Putin?
Yeah. So we heard, again, more of the same. Like, the Russian points are pretty much similar. They're along those same lines that they had in Istanbul in 2022, when Ukraine just couldn't accept their demands for essentially a surrender and Russian control of over Ukrainian military, of Ukrainian domestic and foreign policy, and acceptance of Russian occupation of Ukrainian territories. This time, we don't hear much what exactly is Putin telling, but what we know is that Putin wants Ukraine to surrender the territories that Russia doesn't control, in exchange for Russia maybe leaving a couple of villages that they occupied in Sumy and Kharkiv regions, which is not a territory swap. These are all Ukrainian territories, and Ukraine just can't give up its own people and its own cities for Russians for a pinky promise.
Larry Donnelly, I mentioned, with us as well. Nadia, Larry, what's your expectation of what might happen tonight?
It's very hard to know what to expect. Obviously, we have European leaders there. We have Vladimir Zelensky there. Obviously, Trump is going to be conveying what Russia wants. So those three stakeholder groups are being represented. But I think what we need to have, and we need to be frank about this in terms of our discussion about what to happen tonight, is what the only jury that Trump actually cares about thinks. And that those are the people who voted for him. And they are largely, sad to say, they are largely indifferent to or tired of what's going on thousands of miles away from them. And Trump, I wouldn't say Trump is on either side. His perception is that Russia, in his words, has more of the cause. And of course, that has an adverse impact on Ukraine and its perilous situation. But at the end of the day here, I think we need to know what Trump wants. He wants a ceasefire or a peace of some sort. He doesn't get into detail. He wants something like that so he can get a headline back home and say, promise made, promise kept. And quite frankly, and this is sad to say, I don't think Donald Trump is all that concerned about what happens, how long it lasts, what its terms are, or any of that. And I think one of the reasons why the European leaders are there is not just to be a vanguard for Zelensky or to represent European interests. It's because they know that one way or another, Donald Trump is getting ready to close the book on this. He is saying, this is a European problem. Goodbye and good luck.
So, I mean, is there a possibility that, you know, we might see a degree of confrontation between Donald Trump and Zelensky alongside those European leaders as Trump kind of pursues a very imperfect peace for the sake of peace, so that he can kind of claim victory in this, or that he was the one that brought it about? And there's necessary pushback.
I would certainly hope not. I think that is undesirable from everybody's point of view. But could I rule it out? No, I couldn't. I think what the Europeans are going to be talking about is, again, Steve Witkoff claims that from the negotiations or from the meeting with Putin, that there seems to be some sort of a vague, going along with by Russia of a security guarantee of some sort for Ukraine, perhaps some approval of a path to EU membership. Those are the things that are going to be said by Zelensky, and indeed by European leaders are there. How much weight that will carry with Donald Trump, I'm not 100% sure, because Trump heard it directly from the horse's mouth. He knows what Putin requires in order to get a ceasefire. And I think that is what he's going to be desperately trying to impress upon Zelensky and the Europeans. And again, I believe he is really agnostic about everything else except for, again, getting a headline that says he cut the deal to get peace, and he doesn't care how long it lasts or what its terms are. And I think everyone is very foolish if they think he is going into this with any grand geopolitical strategy or anything like that. This is simply about appeasing and appealing to the people who voted for him. And again, a large swathe of those people care very little about what is going on in Ukraine, the horrible things that are happening there. He wants something to say, I've made a promise, I kept it, goodbye, good luck, this is a European affair.
Nadia, when you speak to friends and family in Ukraine, how do they view what's happening at the moment in Washington, D.C.?
Well, pretty much just as sarcastic and indifferent as myself, in a way. Like, there is for a Ukrainian audience, this is just TV, essentially, and just another threat that Trump could get swayed by Putin's flattery or promises of some dark dealings of with business or Russian oil or whatever, like investment in Russia. If Trump can get swayed with that, that's what's going to happen. But in truth, nobody knows, like, and nobody really expects that there would be a coherent policy. Because I agree that he doesn't have a policy, and the best we can get is him just getting swayed by the last person he spoke to. And and so we're lucky that there's this delegation with Zelensky in the White House today. But if it's going to make a big difference, or if Trump is even going to act on his aspiration for some sort of peace and ceasefire, because apparently Putin now is against a ceasefire, and this is a Ukrainian demand that is now not being honored. So Putin now doesn't want a quick ceasefire, that he wants a lasting peace after long negotiations. He's just buying time, and I can see that.
Yeah.
But you know, like, if it's just a strategy that has worked with Trump so far. Trump has never had made any new sanctions stricter against Russia, and all we know is that Russians are walking the walk and talking the talk to keep Trump appeased, and that's something that Zelensky has been doing really well so far. But if Trump is going to get swayed by either side, God knows.
I know 14 civilians, I think, were killed in bombing overnight in Ukraine, and this is the stuff that really matters. It seems kind of silly to kind of point out what Zelensky is wearing because he's just arrived at the White House, but we know that the question was put to the Ukrainian delegation: what is he going to wear when he turns up? He has just arrived in the last couple of moments while you were speaking, Nadia, and it was all smiles between Trump and Zelensky as they shook hands and waved to the media who were gathered outside before they went into the building. And I guess you'd say he was dressed slightly more formally. He kind of had a slightly more formal jacket and a black shirt on underneath, but buttoned up and no tie. So not quite the suit, but not quite the fatigues either. So everybody seems happy with that. And let that be the final mention, we hope, this evening of what he's wearing. And we don't have a repeat of the last meeting they had in the Oval Office. Is there, Nadia, amongst those people, again, you're speaking to at home, an acceptance that, you know, there will be a degree of compromise? I know the focus is often on the land swap, because there's been talk of that. And as you say, you know what I mean, it's unconscionable for many Ukrainians, the idea that you would be giving up any land. But, you know, is there acceptance that something will have to be given up, be it the land, be it NATO membership, be it security guarantees, be it European Union membership, something else?
Well, was it Churchill who said that you can't negotiate with a lion if with your head in his mouth, or something along those lines? Like, in our situation, Russia has control over certain parts of Ukraine, and giving them legitimacy of that occupation will just keep encouraging them to come back for more. And no, I'm pretty sure that by now many Ukrainians would accept that freezing along the front lines and looking for maybe diplomatic solutions eventually along the lines when maybe Putin dies or something happens to Russian policy, something that that would just acknowledge that this is the reality and we don't have enough manpower and weapons to take all these territories back by military force and hope for the best. But giving recognition to the Russian occupation is just not going to do it. Like, we've seen this in 2014 when Ukraine hardly fired a shot when Russia occupied the Crimea, and essentially after the Russians occupied like parts of the Donetsk and Luhansk regions, Ukraine wasn't able to fight a conventional war against them. There was just not enough, as we know now, not enough firepower, air power. They were realistic about this, and the world just went on. And was Russia happy with this de facto situation? They were not. They came back for much, much more in 22. And this is the experience that Ukrainians will rely on judging that. is just would be unwise, and we would have to deal with much more war. Like the war, like one French writer said about France in 1940, that war is more costly than occupation. And France has saw that in World War II, and Ukraine is seeing this since 2014. So I don't think that anyone would be happy to give recognition to the occupied territories and like say, let Russians keep Donbass in exchange for three villages. Or even like, you know, if there was a swap against that the Russians leave Zaporizhia direction and they keep Donbass, they will come back for Zaporizhia direction, even if they promise not to. There's no stopping with them apart without deterrence. And then this is a whole different story about the security guarantees. But all of a sudden we're all hearing that, oh, Americans are ready to put the boots on the ground. But we've been over this in previous years under Biden administration, and we know very well that everybody's afraid of Russia and all these Ukrainian allies who are now saying, oh, we're going to send boots on the ground after the war. Well, it doesn't do any deterrence. Sorry.
Larry, before I let you go, and Donald Trump and Vladimir Zelensky have just sat down in the Oval Office, so they're going to start speaking to the world's media in just the next couple of moments. But the constituency you mentioned that Trump wants to satisfy at home, if he can't satisfy them, if there's no deal, like, is there any degree to which that's politically damaging for him, given the kind of the big claims he made about bringing peace within a day? Or is this the type of thing he'll just brush off, as you say, this is Europe's problem now, I tried, I'm moving on?
Yeah, sadly, and I have to say I agree with an awful lot of what Nadia just said. Sadly, the realpolitik of this situation, in my view, is that if Trump is not able to help foster some sort of peace, however short-lived, I don't think that it will have significant political consequences for him. This is dominating the airwaves, but again, I would have real doubts about the extent to which this is animating ordinary Americans who are much more concerned with domestic issues. And I suppose that's what makes it all the more sad that the killing continues to go on, that this awful war waged by Russia continues on. And the bottom line is, I regrettably at this juncture don't see an end in sight. We can hope and pray that the unorthodox methods used by Donald Trump and others might work, but I just don't see it in the near term.
Well, they have already started taking questions from the crowd, so God knows what direction this goes. Marco Rubio, J.D. Vance and Steve Witkoff are all there. But Donald Trump answering questions, Vladimir Zelensky looking on. Thank you to Larry Donnelly, law lecturer at the University of Galway, columnist with The Journal, and Nadia Dobranska, who is a Ukrainian historian here in Ireland.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.